Like, I want to wake up to the story that we're in this moment in time. And that to do that, I've got to just defy the artificial as it keeps trying to do everything to keep me from the reality God created me for.
What you find, what you feel now, what you know, to be real. Now, I don't often start the podcast with such heady quotes from great works of art, but today's episode calls for us to pull out all the stops because we're about to get real, my misfit friends. My name is Nancy Carmichael, by the way, not only your crooner, but your chief misfit and humble host here on the aisle. And I am thrilled to have back with us today none other than the Alan Arnold, friend and, dare I say, advocate of us square pegs here. Welcome, Alan.
Thank you, Nancy. And wow, man, starting with that song, kudos to you.
Well, hey, you know, I went halfway, which we're going to talk about later, because, you know, if you're going to go for it, you might as well go for it. I should have just sang it. I was afraid of licensing issues because, you know, we're low budget here, but I don't know. I was just feeling it this morning. What you think? Yeah. Actually, I always thought it was what you think. The real lyric is what you find. And now my mind is blown.
Well, and my mind is blown that that was ever the most popular song in the country, but it was for a while. And
it was. And here
I couldn't
we are.
Get it out of my head when I was writing my new book because I kept thinking of, you know, to be real. And
it's
so,
got to be real. It's got to be real. So there it is. How's about that for a start?
It's a great start.
Thanks so much. Well, I am thrilled to have you back here today. And we are talking, just in case anybody doesn't know, about your new book. You've just written a book, in case you didn't know, called Risk the Real. And it's a book that it's, well, I'm holding it up as if anybody can see it. No one's watching it, but I am holding it up. It's your newest book. And it's something that I have thoroughly enjoyed reading. You know, oftentimes, by the time I talk to an author such as yourself, I don't always have time to get through the whole book. But in this case, I've gotten through the whole book and I took my time with it, which was great. This is the kind of book that you really do want to take your time with. In one sense, I don't want to call it a light read, but it's an easy read. That's not even probably the right way to put it either. It's a joyful read. But it's the kind of thing you have to stop off and pause and think about. How's that? Did that?
Yeah. Well, that was my heart for readers, was how to have a kind pace. And so it's a square 6x6 book. Mm-hmm. If anybody listening has read the Eden option, it's the same size as that, because I found I really love that format. Love it. And it's a fun playground as a writer to invite people into, because each chapter is like 3 pages. And there's a standalone quote between each chapter of, you know, a sentence or just a thought from C.S. Lewis or Madeline L'Engle or whoever it may be. And so my hope was, well, let's go into deep waters, but let's go a step at a time, a thought at a time, and follow that path where it leads. And so I've had a lot of people say that, like, this is a book I actually read. I buy a lot of books. I don't, you know, I'm saying they would tell me, I buy a lot of books. I don't always get through a lot of books, but this one I read quickly because I could do it a few pages at a time. And I stayed with it and ended at a different place on what's artificial and what's real and why does that matter? And that was my whole desire with this book, is to wake people up to, we aren't living in ordinary times. And the artificial isn't even just what you think it is, probably at first hearing of that. And so, yeah, Nancy, thank you for saying that, because that was my hope. If people don't read the book, it's not going to matter much. And so I didn't just want to write it. I wanted to go on a journey.
You wanted people to actually read it? Wow. Right. That's what a novel idea. But yeah, but you know what? I love and I appreciate you navigated that well. Because yes, this is deep stuff, but you gave a lot of breathing space and in the formatting and just visually, right? Because you even kind of incorporate some artistic, some graphic elements. So yes, kudos to you for doing that, because I too am one of those people that, I start a lot of books and I get into a lot of books, but I don't always finish. And it's not an indictment on the author. It's probably speaks more to my ADD reader brain, but this one, yeah, I really appreciated the breathing space that you gave and the fact that, yeah, the chapters were short, so it didn't bog me down.
Good. Oh, well, that's music to my ears. And it's, it's just, we live in such a distracted world. I know it's a lot to ask somebody to take time out of their day to engage in and not just, a thought, but a whole book on something. Mm-hmm. But I think they'll find this an easy read, but also a disruptive and a transformative one, because we don't realize, I don't think, all the forces that are at play in our world trying to pull us further from God into the artificial. And when we don't realize it, when we don't wake up to that, then the result is we get more and more tangled in this web that we don't even really see. And that's why one fun thing to me about the book was I was able to use these past classic references, like the book Brave New World, that novel, and C.S. Lewis's novel, That Hideous Strange.
Oh, we're going to talk about that one for sure. Yep.
But just to go, this is not something that hasn't been thought before, but it's something that is a modern culture we've forgotten.
Right.
And not only have we forgotten, but we've forgotten at the very time it's easier than ever to lose ourselves in the unreal. And so, it's a fascinating dive down the rabbit hole into what's really going on.
Yeah. And I'm into it. I'm into the rabbit holes. I'm into the fascinating dives into, and Brave New World, Hideous Strength. We're going to talk about all of the above. But before we do, you've been here long enough. It's the law here on the aisle, at least for you. We got to do it. We got to play the stupid game.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I wouldn't be on your podcast if we didn't.
It's our calling card. Yeah. So, all right. So today's stupid game, in honor of a story, and I won't give away the story, I won't spoiler alert, but you do reference William Shatner in the book, do you not?
Of course, yes.
Of course you do.
I have to reference William Shatner. He is, I mean, he's just been Captain Kirk since the beginning of time, it seems like.
He has that and so much more. So that's what today's stupid game. Fun facts, Shatnerific about William Shatner. So we're just going to do some true false. I'm going to throw some scenarios at you. You tell me if it's true. You tell me if it's false. And that's the game right there. Are you ready?
Okay. Oh, I'm so ready.
Okay. All right. Fun fact number one. Kirk and Scotty went to space 12 years before Star Trek. Is that true or false?
Okay, now, Nancy, are you basing this on the original Star Trek, or are you basing this on, like, some of the new J.J.?
I'm basing this on what I found on the interwebs. That's all I can tell you. So of course we're going to base this on the original Star Trek, because there is no other Star Trek right now. I live in a home of Trekkies,
right?
So they are the purists, and they've converted me to the extent that I have grown to more than tolerate, but I do have an actual appreciation for the original series. So what it's all based on.
I'm not sure, but it's such a bizarre statement, I'm going to have to say true, just because
just because, when in doubt, say it's true. If it sounds bizarre, yes. So this is what it's, Bill, as they call him on the interwebs, graduated in 1952 and made his TV debut in 1954. Blah, 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 blah. So anyway, they're saying that there was a now lost children's adventure series starred James Doohan, who, as we know, Scotty. of course, Scotty. So they were in this show together. 12 years before Star Trek.
Okay. So there you go. I never knew that, but
now you know.
Wow. That explains their bond. Okay.
Okay. And all right. And since we're talking about co-stars, true or false, he also co-starred with Steve McQueen. Is that true or is that false?
Well, I'm just going to say that's false because I don't know if that much ego and hair could be in one place at one time.
That's true. Well, that's probably why it was a short-lived appearance, because it is true.
What?
Yeah, it's in 1956. He appeared on another show. So this was pre-Star Trek, called TV's Golden Age. And in 1957, a 26-year-old Steve McQueen was with him. So there you go. There you go. And if you doubt me, I'll send you the link, because we cannot question the internet. All right. Let me see. All right. So this one should be easy. True or false? William Shatner starred in 2 Twilight Zone episodes.
True. Yeah. And one of them, well, I loved both of them. I'm a big Twilight Zone fan too. And I hope all your listeners are. But one of them was, the famous airplane episode where he's a passenger and he looks out and he's afraid to fly. He's kind of nervous. And he looks out his window and there's this like abominable snowman on the wing of the plane.
Oh, yes. I remember this.
Remember that one where he was freaking
out? I do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was one episode and then there was another one. So, yes. So, very good. You got that one correct. All right. Two more. True or false? Kirk and Spock in real life. So Shatner and Leonard Nimoy were enemies. They hated each other.
No, that is false. Although they had their, like any other, two people, they had their fights and things. But, well, I mean, at least I'm reading in the bio that William Shatner wrote, he would say they were lifelong best friends. And I think, yeah. So what is your answer, true or false?
That rings true with the, so you and the internets agree. Says yes. In his book, Leonard, My 50-Year Friendship with a Remarkable Man, Shatner wrote that Leonard Nimoy was his closest friend in the world. So there you go. And close friends do have disagreements from time to time. So you are correct, sir.
Plus, when one of them is a Vulcan, it creates some awkward moments.
Some tension. That's true. Yes. You got to be real, though, right?
You got to be real.
Yeah. All right. So final fun fact. And I bet you're going to know this one, too, because you are a Shatner fan. True or false? The mask used in the famous movie Halloween, right? Michael Myers, that mask was originally a Captain Kirk mask.
Yes, that is true. That is, and it's such a bizarre thing, but the mask that is like the one that causes you to be afraid to sleep at night.
That's the one.
It's a cheap Captain Kirk Halloween mask, and they spray painted it white, and there you go.
The rest, as they say, is cinematic history.
But Nancy, so every one of your answers was true, I think. Is that
only one? I tricked you on one. I was going to do the thing where everyone was true, but just because people like to detect patterns, and I was going to trip you up that way. But no, you were not tripped up.
Okay. Well, yeah. I know people can't see this, but while we're on the quiz and before we wrap it up, I just have to hold up. I saw William Shatner at Comic-Con last year, and I write about it. It's actually in Risk the Real. I write about this awkward meeting I had with my boyhood hero. But here's the picture.
Oh my gosh, will you send, can I put that in the show notes, please? Will you send that?
Yes, you can.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I finally met him.
It shouldn't just be, I shouldn't be the only one to benefit from that. I think the misfits everywhere.
Right. And so if people want to see me with the great William Shatner, who,
that's amazing,
who really didn't want to be there at Comic-Con, and he really wasn't in a very chipper mood. But
was it Tim Allen in Galaxy Quest?
Yes, it was. He was, so you had to pay, that's the norm.
Of course, right.
To take a photo op with the people that you want to meet, or, the actors or sports stars. So that's just norm. But you wait in line for like an hour and a half and finally get up And it's like, I get to meet William Shatner. Like, I've been watching
him. Lifelong dream.
And he was sitting on a stool, and they rush you in, and like literally barely before you finished walking over there, they're like, done, next. And you're trying, you know, you want to say hi or shake his hand or anything.
No time for you to just spill your heart of how much he meant to you your whole life.
Yeah. And as I was walking out of this little curtained off area where he was doing that, I heard him tell the photographer, like, hey, these people are getting too close to me. Like, just get them in, get them out. I don't want them touching me. We need to move on. And I'm like, okay, well, you know.
Boyhood dreams shattered. Shattered by Shatner.
But he's, I mean, come on. He's 92 years old and that's he's true. Still doing
He has a right to be grumpy. So, yeah, we have a similar story. So the movie It's a Wonderful Life, they have a big festival in Seneca Falls, New York, which is not far from where we live. And we went several years ago, and some of the children are still around, and they too sign autographs for money. So we got our daughter to get Zuzu's autograph, because who wouldn't want Zuzu's autograph? So Zuzu was a little grumpy, but she did, for $20, sign an autograph, which hangs in her room as we speak. So there you go.
Well, it's amazing. I didn't know anybody was still alive from that movie. So that's...
Well, yeah, the kids, they're like, you know, they're pushing, they're got to be in their 70s by now. But, oh, yeah, maybe even 80.
Well, you know, you can't get to Jimmy Stewart, so you gotta go for him there
now. It's a piece of history. So you put up with a little grumpiness and you move on. So, excellent.
Do you know, on the Isle of Misfits, I think you ought to, I love your logo. I have your coffee mug.
Awesome. And
I love it, but I think you ought to find a way to get William Shatner on the logo somehow, just in the future, because
he'll embed his face in a coconut. How about that?
I love it.
All right. Yeah. All right. Duly noted. I'm writing note to myself. I'm writing it as we speak. Such great ideas. See, you're not only a friend and advocate of the Misfits, you are giving us logo gold. Love it. So excellent job once again on the stupid game. And of course, you know, I'm running out of Misfit merch to send you. I think I've reduced myself to sending random things from my house. So this is, I don't know. I'll be decluttering and sending something to
any, Wild any Heart. Any old Earth, Wind, and Fire vinyl albums that you have?
Soon. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'll certainly dig around for those.
Barry Manilow concert.
Barry Manilow. Yeah. Fanilow gear. Yeah. Wonderful. Well, as long as we're getting real here, so let's talk. So all right, I told you there's so many directions I could go, and I'm sure I could just turn you loose to talk about any number of things, but this is my launching point, because you reference, even before we started our stupid game, that hideous strength. Okay, so we got to talk about this in light of your book, right? I don't want to just talk about that hideous strength, but you had mentioned that is one of your favorites. And I have to say, so my husband and I, it feels like, you know how when people used to watch The Wizard of Oz once a year when it was a TV event? So I feel like my husband and I read that book, it feels like once a year, maybe it's once every other year, but it's like a regular part of our rotation. And we read it together because that's how strongly we feel about the prescience of this message. I think I just want to say that hideous strength, go and see what comes out of your mouth.
Yeah. Well, first, I'm amazed that you guys read it so frequently, like reread it even every couple of years or so, but that's awesome. It's actually, I think, one of the least known books by C.S. Lewis.
I know, which is crazy to me.
And even people that have like heard of the Space Trilogy, which if listeners haven't, he did this, you know, he's known for Narnia in the world of fiction, of course. But he also did what he called a grown-up fairy tale, which was the Space Trilogy, or some people call it the Ransom Trilogy because the protagonist's name is Ransom.
Right.
But yeah, of the three books in that Hideous Strength is the third. It's over twice as long as the first two. It's the first two take place on other planets. This one takes place in like an Oxford type college university setting primarily. And it really is a wild, trippy, prophetic look at where we are today. Like, he wrote this 80 plus years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it is amazing how he is describing not just where we are today, but like the strategy of those in power who want to change the world, recreate the world, and in our own image. And what I talk a lot about is in the book is, you know, when we're trying to distinguish between the real and the artificial, part of the problem is humans want to create their own reality. They want to decide, no, this is the way I want the world to work. And so that's my reality. And then it's gone, you know, further and further into, we change words because we don't like what words used to mean. Mm-hmm. And so like the organization in that Hideous Strength, the initials mm-hmm. for their group is NICE.
N-I-C-E.
N-I-C-E. And they are, of course, the most cruel, dark force out there, manipulative, destructive, anti-God.
The irony.
They go by NICE. And so it's an interesting read on how really toward the end of times, which C.S. Lewis, I think, would say it was approaching that in his era. And certainly he came out of war, you know, a time of war and a time of great loss and destruction. And we look at our world today, and whether you think we have hundreds of years before Jesus comes back, or whether you think it's, you know, 6 months or whatever you think, we're certainly toward the end of this story that began in Genesis and from a timeline, from God's timeline, I believe. And so this book really looks at it in a way, in story form, that shows if that were the case and you found yourself in this situation, what would you do? How would you react? And no spoilers here or anything, but the main husband and wife who are in this story, they both have to go through an awakening, because mm-hmm. the man really likes, from the very beginning, he really likes the validation and the kind of accolades he gets from hanging with these university type business leaders, thought leaders, professors, and he's wooed into that lifestyle, and he really starts parroting what they want to hear and doing what they want, because he feels like that will make him all he was ever meant to be. Mm. And he gets caught up in that web, right? And
right, afraid to get canceled, right? Before canceling was a thing.
Right, and so it's this journey for him of, well, what are there really even two sides? Is it that, could it be that simple? And how could I be on the wrong side? And, you know, and it's just fascinating to watch that character study, because we all can see so much of ourselves in ground we've given and in compromises we've made. And it's just, he's a really interesting character, but the wife is more the protagonist in terms of her journey of awakening to, the world I always thought was real isn't real, and there's something far more real. And so that, I hold that book up, that story, that novel up in Risk the Real in different places, because it's just, C.S. Lewis, he wrote that at a time where you go, how could he, it's almost like he gave the blueprint in that novel for all that the enemy was doing through all these different ways, through, you know, everything from the economy to climate to the religious spirit to
To gender roles and all of it.
All of it. It's all in there. And it was written 80 years ago. And it's just fascinating. And at the time, you know, that was circulating, you know, around the same time, we have like shortly after Brave New World.
Yep,
and
yep.
And then we have, you know, 1984 and all these books that
which I remember reading as a freshman in college, or in high school in 1984, by the way, fun fact for another stupid game.
And it in 1984 in Brave New World, you know, I contrast these two really groundbreaking books in Risk the Real. It's just a fascinating thing to go and wow, in 1984, the whole thing was George Orwell, when he wrote that, it was written, of course, 1984 was the year he was writing about,
mm-hmm. yeah.
40 years before the future. Which seems like, you know, now we look at 1984 as ancient history.
Right.
But in that book, he was talking about how people are controlled by inflicting pain, basically. Like the government, the big brother inflicts pain to submit cause people to submit. And Brave New World contrasted that and said, actually, people in the future will be controlled by pleasure and distraction and numbing. And so they took really different views of how is the future dystopian world run. And one is causing people to submit by pressure and pain. That was 1984.
Mm-hmm.
In the world, it was, no, we just numb them with pleasure and distraction and get them focused on things that are not the main thing and addicted to those things.
Yeah.
And so all these novels you just look at and go,
right.
And telling a story about our time. In
right. And haven't we seen a little bit of both, right? Even in the last 4 or 5 years, a little bit of numbness, a little bit, you know, like the word amuse. I used to teach, you know, to talk to students about this, you know, well, let's break down the word amuse, right? What does it literally mean, right? So muse is to think or to ponder. A is that, you know, that article that negates things. So to just be amused and entertained. So we've got that. But then also there is an argument that can be made to inflict at least fear of punishment, fear of, I don't know, disease, things like that, fear of being canceled. So there's a motivating or at least a de-incentivizing factor to both of those things.
There are. And as we, you know, kind of think about our current moment in time, I just was noticing how everyone, including myself, including those I love, including just people who come up and tell me their story, they all talk about how it's so hard to be fully present anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things in the book I really want to do is kind of help people see that and issue a wake-up call. And so I came up with this phrase that I couldn't fully quickly describe to people what I meant by what we're talking about now, because it was more than being numbed. It was more than being distracted, but it was all of that together. And so what I kind of coined a term of and is a partificial daze, meaning
yes.
We're all partially present, but fully disoriented by this kind of haze of anxiety and exhaustion and addiction, where just getting through the day is a major accomplishment. Like we feel like we've achieved a big victory if we can just get through our normal day, and we numb ourselves with our screens. We're always looking into this screen that we hold in our hand for some kind of entertainment, life, answers, or just checking out. And we don't even remember what we were looking at 5 minutes later. And so that's the culture and the world that we're in right now, you know, Nancy. And so, yeah, in the book, one of the things I just go into is we will never wake up to what's going on around us if we stay stuck in a position of just trying to check out, get relief. We're trying to multitask. We're trying to just keep moving, not really think about what's going on, but just kind of stay busy, stay distracted. So the first part of the book is like, you know, it's my breakup letter to the world, basically, where I begin it by saying, I'm off of this ride. I'm no longer going to live partially present, fully nowhere, partially everywhere, you know, trying to multitask and trying just to just get through the day with a little bit of joy, a little bit of relief. Like, I want to wake up to the story that we're in this moment in time. And that to do that, I've got to just defy the artificial as it keeps trying to do everything to keep me from the reality God created me for.
And we're going to pause it right there. I know, not fair, but not to worry, my misfit friends, because we're going to drop part two of this conversation next week. Not in 2 weeks. That's too long to wait, but want to give you enough time to kind of chew on the things we talked about today, because it's really good stuff. And if that wasn't enough, Alan has sweetened the pot. He's offering a free copy of Risk the Real to one of you fortunate misfits out there. All you got to do is drop a comment at isleofmisfits.com. That's I-S-L-E of misfits.com. So you're going to have two chances, right? Because I'm posting this, episode one, and then episode two. Two chances to post a comment. Could be anything. It could be, hey, I'll take it. So we would just want to keep building this community, right? And spreading the message of owning our awkward, loving our fellow misfit, and seeking beauty and truth everywhere. Because wouldn't the world be a better place if we all did that? So see you next time.